Imagine trying to house over 4.2 million people in a country where the entire map was explicitly, intentionally drawn to keep people apart. Like, how do you even begin? Welcome to today's deep dive into a transformative South African policy document called Breaking New Ground. We're looking at how a nation dismantles historical segregation by engineering real integrated communities rather than just, slapping roofs on houses. So, okay, let's unpack this. Post-1994, the South African state delivered 1.6 million housing units. On paper, that sounds like a massive victory, right?
Yeah, it was a monumental numerical victory. But it accidentally became a spatial failure.
Because the spatial layout of the country was still actively working against them, wasn't it?
Exactly. To understand why, we really have to look at the immediate history and where those 1.6 million units actually went. Because the state needed to build at this incredible scale, they basically had to rely on cheap land out on the extreme urban periphery.
Oh, so way outside the city centers.
Right. So despite their best intentions, they inadvertently supercharge the very urban sprawl and isolation that the apartheid era maps had initiated in the first place.
Wow. So they essentially mass-produced these uniform houses out in the middle of nowhere. It feels to be like giving someone a car but refusing to build roads.
That is a really great way to put it.
I mean, if you're handed an asset but you are physically cut off from the economic hubs, from jobs, markets, even basic transit, how is that actually an asset?
Well, it isn't, and that is the crux of asset poverty. Delivering basic shelter without economic access simply does not generate wealth. What emerged was a severe dual economy.
Like a split between the high and low end.
Yes, exactly. The high-end residential market boomed, fueled by traditional mortgages and prime locations. But the low-end market stagnated entirely. The subsidized houses out on the periphery just couldn't be easily traded on the secondary market.
Right. Think about your own city. Property values are heavily dictated by proximity to amenities and jobs. If you strip that away, the house is really just cinder blocks.
Precisely. Because there was no secondary market. Owners couldn't borrow against the house to, say, start a business or send a kid to university. The wealth generation mechanism that we normally associate with real estate was completely broken.
So the government realizes peripheral housing is a dead end for wealth creation, and the policy pivots toward location and integration. But looking at the plan, here is where it gets really interesting. They heavily push in-situ upgrading.
Yes, upgrading in place.
Wait, upgrading a slum while people are still actively living in it? That sounds like an absolute logistical nightmare. Wouldn't it be infinitely faster and frankly safer to just clear the area, build proper medium density apartments, and then move everyone back?
Logistically, yeah. Perhaps. But sociologically, clearing those areas is disastrous. The policy recognized that bulldozing communities completely destroys a fragile but essential social fabric.
Because of the connections people have there.
Exactly. People living in informal settlements rely on complex, hyper-local networks for childcare, security, and informal microeconomies. If you displace them, even temporarily, those networks shatter and they rarely recover.
Oh, wow. I hadn't thought of that. So how do you actually execute that without tearing the neighborhood apart?
Well, that is the real urban planning challenge. You have to navigate securing legal land tenure, retrofitting plumbing, and managing zoning laws without disrupting the existing footprint of the community. It is incredibly difficult.
I can only imagine.
But they paired this with strategic, social, medium-density housing. Things like multi-level walk-ups inserted directly into existing urban opportunity zones. The goal is to physically weave lower-income populations into areas where the economy is already thriving.
Okay, I see the logic, but executing that level of surgical urban planning requires a massive amount of capital and, well, absolute trust in the system, which brings us to the money.
Right, the financial side is massive.
Because this policy had to tackle systemic corruption while simultaneously trying to fund the missing middle. It's like trying to fix a leaky pipe while simultaneously increasing the water pressure.
Yes, the pressure and the leaks.
Right. Like, if you put more subsidy money into a broken system to reach new demographics, doesn't it just spill out through fraud before it reaches the community?
That is exactly why they had to attack both the pressure and the leaks at the same time. Let's look at the pressure first, the missing middle. These are households earning between 3,500 and 7,000 rand a month.
So they make too much for a full subsidy.
Exactly. They make too much to qualify for a full government housing subsidy. But retail banks view them as too high risk for standard mortgages. They were entirely locked out of the market.
So how do you bridge that specific financial gap?
The policy engineered new financial mechanisms, specifically government-backed deposit support linked to household savings. By subsidizing the down payment barrier, they basically de-risked the loans enough to bring retail banks back to the table.
Okay, but going back to that leaky pipe metaphor, none of that matters if the funds are siphoned off, right?
Right. So they overhauled the institutional mechanics to plug the leaks. They established a special investigative unit with real teeth dedicated entirely to unearthing housing fraud.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and they coupled that with a national toll-free whistleblowing hotline.
It really all comes down to the core realization of these sources. True wealth and systemic stability don't come from just putting up four walls and a roof. They come from creating integrated, sustainable human settlements. Building a house is just construction, but building a settlement is building an economic engine.
And that economic engine is the only mechanism capable of dismantling the spatial and economic barriers entrenched by past policies.
Absolutely. So we'll leave you with this to ponder. Think about the layout of your own community. If you were tasked with redesigning a city to erase decades of intentional segregation, would you focus your very first dollar on where people sleep or where they work?